Imagine, a podcast series by Imagine Theatre.
Hello again, how are you? Welcome to episode 55 of this podcast series as we continue to follow the work of the children's theatre and pantomime production company Imagine Theatre.
For more information, go to their website at www.imaginetheatre.co.uk.
I hope you enjoyed the last episode where we looked at the vitally important role of the junior ensemble. We heard about the experience from some former junior ensemble members, found out more about the process from auditions to casting, contracts to the performance run, and we spoke to somebody whose career literally took them from junior ensemble to roles in the West End and on Broadway, as well as an extensive career as a choreographer, including the Tonys and the Oscars. Remember that and all of the other previous episodes are still available to download. All you have to do is go to where you normally get your podcasts from. And while you're at it, subscribe to the series and you won't miss out in the future. Well, this time we're going to talk about what panto means to the theatres themselves with the Group Commercial Director for Trafalgar Theatre Venues, Chris McGuigan, who looks after around 15 theatres across the UK. And of course, Imagine has formed a partnership with Trafalgar, producing 5 or 6 shows at Christmas. Chris, first of all, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Martin. It's great to be talking to you.
So tell us a bit about your background, first of all, how you came to be with Trafalgar and, what sort of career you've had to date.
Oh, yeah, sure. So, listen, it's a long and slightly checkered history, I suppose, but I've always worked in theatre, live entertainment of some description since finishing at university. So I worked at Symphony Hall in Birmingham straight off the bat from having studied, and from there worked at the Royal Spa Centre for about 3 years over in Leamington Spa, which really was my first professional interaction with panto, I suppose, working with, Mark Andrews Productions were the incumbent producer there at the time. And from there, got a job with the Ambassador Theatre Group, where I worked in a variety of marketing roles and was involved quite closely with First Family Entertainment when that was set up, and started producing those pantos for the ATG venues. And then from sort of 2016 onwards, I worked at Kudos Entertainment and really in their HQ Theatres division, but actually with quite a close relationship with the pantomime division over there as well. And then latterly landed at Trafalgar, where we are, as you say, pulling together a venue portfolio, and pantomime is a very, very important part of that, particularly in the UK regional business. So yeah, I've kind of been here, there and everywhere over the years, I suppose.
Tell me a bit about the Trafalgar group.
We do all sorts. I mean, my particular role is focused on Trafalgar Theatres, which is obviously the venue operation side of the business. They acquired HQ Theatres from Kudos sort of post-pandemic, March 2021, and since then have been building the business, I suppose, and integrating it into the wider Trafalgar portfolio. But the group itself is very broad. So as you say, we have, 15 theatres in the UK. We have one in Australia, which I haven't yet had the chance to visit. Nobody will pay for the airfare, I don't think, but yeah. But we also have a producing arm in-house. So Trafalgar Theatre Productions produces shows in the West End, overseas, and on tour. We also we have Jonathan Church Theatre Productions, which is a subsidiary company, which again is part of that producing output. We own and operate a company called Trafalgar Releasing, which is a live event cinema company. And those guys get all the exciting gigs going and capturing Coldplay and BTS and Metallica and then broadcasting that live into cinemas. As if that wasn't enough to go at, and there are other moving parts as well, I should say, but the other sort of primary part of the business is Stagecoach, the children's drama franchise business, is also part of Trafalgar. So it's pretty broad and pretty wide, actually, in terms of its footprint in that entertainment landscape. I think the theatre side of things is very central to it, and it's the background that the senior team here at Trafalgar know and come from and understand. So we're having fun, it's fair to say, in all those different areas.
Yeah, and I mean, it proves what a small world the entertainment business is, because you obviously worked at the Royal Spa Centre, which is now an Imagine venue. You obviously worked at First Family, so you'll know Laura Taylor and Eric Potts. I actually worked with a guy called Tony Church, who is Jonathan Church's dad. And I spoke to Jonathan earlier today because he's directing the co-production between Curve and Sadler's Wells of the tour of 42nd Street. It's a small world, isn't
it? It's a very, very small world, yes. And I always say to people, you know, don't fall out with anybody. Don't burn your bridges, whatever you do, because you can guarantee that, yeah, you'll interact with people again, you know, regardless of what those circumstances might be. So, yes, everybody knows everybody else. And yeah.
So do you remember maybe the first panto you ever went to see as a child?
Do you know, I remember it really clearly, actually, which is probably says something about me, actually. But it was the Davenport Theatre in Stockport. I was born and bred in Macclesfield, in Cheshire, so that was kind of my local venue. And it was Ken Dodd in a production of Puss in Boots in, I think, 1986, believe it or not, all that time ago. And I went along as part of a group booking. My mum and dad worked for what was then ICI, the pharmaceuticals company. And ICI used to take a large group of kids along to see the panto. And so I went along and I remember it actually really, really clearly. And I think partly because I think we met Ken after the show and I was a, you know, 8-year-old, 9-year-old, whatever I was at the time. And that was just thrilling, you know, kind of seeing somebody who had been up there entertaining us. And many, many years later, whilst working in Leamington and in other venues, I had a bit to do with Ken as he was, you know, still touring his show, even in his later years. And I had some very entertaining conversations with him about that show and about his memories of the Davenport Theatre in Stockport. So yes, that was my first ever pantomime.
That's another coincidence, because the first pantomime that I ever remember, it may not have been the first I went to see, but it's one that really stands out in my memory, was Ken Dodd in Robinson Crusoe at the Theatre Royal in Nottingham in about 1974, I think it was.
How funny. There
so,
you go.
Yeah, that's strange, isn't it? So very in the 20s. In the 21st century, you know, especially after COVID, what does panto mean to the Trafalgar venues? Because we hear so often about maybe smaller venues, sometimes large venues, who survive throughout the year on the revenue that they bring in from their panto season.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I think it's never... never been more important, I think, than it is in this post-pandemic period, both from a financial commercial perspective, I suppose, in terms of what it generates and what it delivers to venues up and down the country and to the sector as a whole. But also, I think, just in the kind of spirit of pantomime, it's important. And, you know, I often say not only is it the first trip to the theatre for so many children and young people, but actually it gets woven into the fabric of the buildings that it takes place in. And, you know, if I think about our theatre teams around the country, that, you know, they all look forward to it. They're all interested in it right through the year. They want to know who's cast, who's coming back from last year. And it just becomes part of that cycle. And I think having that interrupted for a couple of years was really difficult, actually. I found both of those panto seasons, you know, the first one that just didn't happen at all, and the second one that was disrupted, actually really, really difficult, because we were all out of that usual cycle of, you know, of enjoying ourselves and getting back in contact with people that we know, and just hearing all the gossip, I suppose, that goes around at panto season. In terms of the commercial side of things, I mean, across our group, pantomime is worth somewhere between 15 and 20% of our total box office annually. And I think that's probably true of most venues, you know, around the country. So kind of a fifth of your income coming in 5-6 week period. So it couldn't be more important. And I think in a world where funding in the subsidised sector is shrinking, where people have, you know, less money and less support coming in from, be it local authorities or the Arts Council, having a Christmas show, a pantomime that really delivers, is increasingly important. You're only ever as good as your last one. You're only ever as good as the year previous, you know. And I think that's why producers like Imagine and you know, the other commercial producers that are out there are so important, and why that partnership working is so important.
We've spoken at length on this series about the logistics of producing pantomime, but there are logistical challenges at venues as well, aren't there? Because for some venues, for instance, it may be the only in-house show that it produces each year, and that will bring in challenges of extra staffing and all sorts of things, won't it?
Yeah, for sure, and they're definitely more connected to the Panto production, I would say, than any other show that tours in there. You know, even those venues that regularly take the week-long shows or the big musicals. You know, to an extent, when you're a presenting theatre, those things are done to you, if you like. Pantomime occupies a different space to that, actually. It belongs to everybody, and yes, you know, regularly members of staff will work above and beyond in order to make the Panto happen. You know, members of the technical team will take on additional roles and will have an input into the creative side of things. And I think, again, that's enormously valuable for people and something that they really value themselves.
It has to be planned carefully because I would assume that you'd need probably more staff backstage and front of house. There'll be the logistics of the school parties, the coach loads of kids coming in every day, and of course the venue will probably be open for, in some instances, longer hours.
That's right, and all of those things make it the busiest possible time of year, but also the most kind of thrilling. And listen, I'm a firm believer that theatres are, you know, theatres. They're not churches. They're not there to be admired and looked at with nobody in them. They're there to be used, and they're there to be animated, and you know, they're there to have audiences coming into them. To do that 12 times a week, you know, during that Christmas period is fantastic. And I think it motivates the teams in the venue as well. It's hard work, you know, as we know it is, and that's just as true off stage as it is on stage. But I think it gives them that boost and it gives them that lift that they need. And you know, you've got hordes and hordes of people coming out, having had a wonderful time, telling you they've had a wonderful time, smiling and enjoying themselves. So yeah, really, really important.
It really is a shop window for the venue, isn't it? Because hopefully many of those people who would not ordinarily go to the venue maybe during the year will hopefully come back, especially children.
Yes, and I think we see that increasingly, actually. And again, I'm a firm believer that getting people across the threshold, getting them to have a really great experience, you know, is one half of the marketing battle, actually. Once you set foot in somewhere, it's not an alien environment anymore. And I think we do see crossover from Panto audiences into other areas of the programme. A huge number of people who only ever come to the Panto as well, of course, but actually there's good crossover and a good opportunity to develop audiences from people who may be interacting with you know, first off in a pantomime setting.
So why do you think pantomime is so successful? It's evolved over time. I'm not sure what you particularly love about it, but you know, there are lots of things that theatres could stage over the festive period, whether it's a festive show, a touring musical, or whatever. So why does pantomime continue to thrive, do you think?
Well, it's an interesting question. I think it's about adaptability. I think it has adapted to shifts and changes without losing, you know, the important traditions. I think it remains one of the few live entertainment shows that really leans on kind of some of the old routines, you know, the variety of music hall routines that were successful because they were so funny or zany or crazy. Marrying that with more modern choreography, more modern scenery, settings, video content is all part of the evolution of Panto. I suppose that's what really makes it successful, is the fact that it can evolve and adapt to bring through new generations whilst not alienating people who have, you know, are more traditional about what they want to see.
And what do you love about it personally?
Comedy. I love the comedy. I love the belly laughs, and I love the opportunity to be silly in a theatre. I guess that's it in a nutshell, really.
As a kid, you may sit there in awe of what's going on stage. It's somewhere you can be loud, you can throw yourself into it. And then as you get older, you may lose interest a little bit. And then when you have kids of your own, it becomes a totally new experience because you may spend more of the time watching your own kids watching the show than actually watching the show yourself. Is that one of the reasons why perhaps it attracts all generations?
Yes, I think so, and I think you see it through new eyes, don't you, when you go with children or family members who maybe haven't experienced it previously. I have to say, I have two daughters who are now 18 and 16, which is slightly terrifying, and we've been taking them both to the Panto since they were about 18 months old, and I genuinely thought at 15, 14, 15, they'd probably start to lose interest, and they're still just as keen to come and watch, you know, as they ever were. They've ebbed and flowed in terms of how much they get involved, if I'm completely honest with you, with that sort of you know, slightly embarrassed in places, but they never want to miss it. And if there's ever an opportunity to see two, three, four a season, they're always absolutely up for it. So, it does shift and change. You do see it differently when you have family members that go with you. But, I suppose it brings all those memories flooding back, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I think there are elements in Panto that will attract a particular age group, but also that's where casting is really important, isn't it?
Yeah, completely. And we've had cast from all over the place in the past. I think Diversity in Southend have done maybe 3-4 years as part of the Trafalgar group, and again attracts a whole different audience. But the best Pantos for me is one that has something for everybody, something to attract different ages, and that really kind of pushes the buttons in terms of comedy and music and just all round entertainment.
I think it's really interesting as well, because you, not you personally, but the group, if you like, works with two totally different Panto producers. Obviously Imagine produce a number of your shows, but Crossroads do as well, and that must be an interesting experience, working with maybe two slightly different styles of production.
Yeah, I think that's right. It's certainly interesting when it comes to casting conversations, I can tell you, and both companies suggest the same name and you're not quite sure where to go. We're a little bit poacher and gamekeeper in the same scenario, I suppose. Both companies have got a lot to recommend them to audiences, and I think the storytelling that comes through in the Imagine productions for me is absolutely central to things. And I think where Steve and Sarah and Laura and others get that right is in making sure that all of the traditional Panto elements are in there, but there's still a really strong sense of story. So yes, both completely different, but no less entertaining for that.
So you must have seen hundreds, if not thousands, of pantomimes over the years. Which would be your favourite, do you think?
Oh, it's almost impossible to say. I once saw 27 pantomimes in one season. That was my record.
You're still having counselling for that.
Well, I remember sitting and watching the Chuckle Brothers in Southampton on about, it must have been January the 1st. It was Panto number 25, something like that. And I was so fed up, and everybody around me was having the most amazing time. And I think I just hit a Panto wall where it was kind of, enough already. That said, I'm still, crazy enthusiastic. I normally average maybe 8 to 10 shows a year, including our own and including, a handful of other ones. I don't know if I have a favourite. I don't know if I have a favourite title or if I have a favourite show that I've ever seen. I've enjoyed shows at the Birmingham Hippodrome. I very much enjoyed Swansea this year. And I know that was an award winner at the Panto Awards. But I thought that was a really superb production, both in terms of how it looked and in how, the audience interacted with it. And again, traipsing around and seeing things, you're always cheered up when something comes along and really hits you between the eyes. And for me, the Imagine production in Swansea did that this year.
It's interesting, because I think most people would pick from two or three favourites, and Cinderella would be up there. Aladdin maybe would be up there. A lot of the elements are very similar, I guess. But in terms of the title, you don't have a particular favourite then?
I would say that as somebody who sees a lot of pantomimes, actually something different is usually helpful, a different sort of story. And Swansea was Beauty and the Beast this year, and actually is not a title that I've seen very often, and I thought it was wonderful. So I would always take a slightly different title rather than some of those, kind of big hitters, I guess.
That's an interesting discussion, because, with the job that you do, you'd probably think we should go with a safe title because that will definitely sell tickets. Whereas as an audience member, you might want something a little bit different, which may not sell so many tickets. That's an interesting sort of paradox, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yes. Very interesting. I suppose with a commercial hat on, you would go down, Cinderella, Aladdin, and Peter Pan's, wouldn't you? Kind of all the way. I don't know. I think there's only so many times you can see Cinderella being taken to the ball, I guess, before it becomes Cinderella being taken to the ball. And therefore you kind of long for something slightly different or slightly more out there.
Having said that, there are a couple of things really that I think are worth discussing. One is whether you'd like to see brand new titles that maybe have never been done before as a panto, or some of the pantos resurfacing that have been lost along the way. Would that be a good idea, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's something that that has to be familiar about pantomime, I think. So I'm not sure an entirely new title, you know, that's not part of the panto canon is something that it would be a risk, I suppose, wouldn't it, to do something like that. But I think some of those titles that maybe have got lost or have maybe waned over the years, you know, could be resurrected, and I think that would be quite interesting. You know, we all have a stake in keeping panto fresh and in keeping, you know, audiences interested and engaged. So yeah, I'd be up for that.
And the other thing to discuss, particularly, you know, with the venues in mind, is that historically pantos would very often go on to Easter or sometimes beyond, and then members of the cast will go straight from there into summer season. Sir Ian McKellen, John Bishop, literally took Mother Goose on tour until after Easter this year. Is that something we might see returning in venues, or do you think it's a big ask?
I think it's a big ask. I think it's a big ask because there aren't that many Ian McKellens and John Bishops out there who, A, would be prepared to do that, and B, would draw an audience for that length of time. That said, I think there is a world where, you know, extending a week at a time and building those audiences back up again is potentially feasible in venues. I suppose it was a particular model, Mother Goose. You know, there was a particular sort of focus on it, and it was a particular touring model, which isn't really the case with most other pantos. But I've always been a firm believer that if something's working, then, you know, extend it and offer it to more people.
Absolutely. And there is one thing that really does make a venue more inclusive than anything else, and that's panto, isn't it?
100%. Yeah, 100%. And you only need to look around the audience at any panto performance, and you will see diversity in terms of age, in diversity in terms of ethnicity. You'll see, you know, young and old alike enjoying themselves and laughing at different things, and sometimes laughing at the same things.
Now, we're just over halfway through the year now, and the countdown begins, and we've talked about what that means at Imagine headquarters, but what does that mean with the Trafalgar Group, with the 15 venues you have?
In panto terms, I mean, we are on sale year round these days, so we spend September, October, November working through titles and schedules and pricing and so on and so forth, with a view to the shows being on sale on the day that the prior year begins, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then it is a year-round focus. I mean, from a marketing perspective, there's an awful lot of work that takes place. From a planning perspective, there's an awful lot of work that takes place. And we're in regular contact with, you know, Steve and Sarah and the guys at Crossroads, monitoring sales, checking sales, activating marketing, you know, signing off casting. It really is a year-round job, you know. And when I worked across the way at Kudos, for a period of time, I had a colleague who worked solely on the panto side of the business, and he used to just crack up at the number of people who would say to him, "Oh, what do you do the rest of the year?" You know, and he's kind of like, "Yeah, we're producing all of these shows, and the logistics of doing that mean it's busy all year, and then it gets even busier towards the end of the year."
And because the tickets have been on sale for, you know, half of the year already, are you already sort of analysing the sales so far and whether you're meeting targets and so on?
Yep, absolutely. We are obsessed and look at them forensically. We'll base every week we'll produce a report that benchmarks against the same week last year, so that we can see where we might be ahead or behind, and so that we can take action. And, you know, it's a complicated thing. You know, if you announce casting early one year, then obviously you would see an increase in sales that might not be reflected in the following year until you make the same casting announcement or a similar casting announcement. But yeah, we're on it literally every week. And yeah, Steve and Sarah will tell you we never don't want to talk about panto sales and how they're going. We're always interested in the conversation about it.
And we've talked at length about, you know, how the genre itself has evolved, but, you know, venues and how they deal with panto has also changed over time. You know, there was a time where there'd be more three-show days, for instance. There was also a time where, you know, would definitely be an evening performance, 7:30 or something like that. That's changed an awful lot now, hasn't it? We're seeing, you know, those show times much earlier in the day and maybe less three-show days.
Yeah, I think the three-show days has changed, I suppose, because members of the cast find it very tiring, you know, and I think it's certainly been my experience where I've worked on shows that have that. To an extent, the audience at that third show, or probably the middle show, actually don't get both barrels in the way that they would like to, because understandably, you know, kind of everybody's tired and worn out. And I think in the context of a long run, that's trickier to achieve these days. I think also, you know, the shows are more technical, you know, that there's more scenery, sets, costumes, you know, more stuff to kind of move around, and therefore it puts pressure, you know, kind of across the board. We follow the market, if you like, in terms of show times, and again, it's something else that we will analyze year on year and just assess what is the right time for that show to take place. I think our experience suggests that if you go later, you don't necessarily attract, you know, more of an adult audience, and actually it's a bit too late for the families to go. But we still have some 7 o'clock shows in the schedules. That's fairly typical. And then, yes, the usual run of kind of matinees and early evening 5:30s, that kind of thing.
The turnaround in between shows is particularly scary for any crew members, I have to say. But I think for cast members, my recollection of three show days is that sort of Groundhog Day, deja vu moment in the middle of a show where you think, have we not just done this bit?
Yeah, I can imagine. It's a lot to do, isn't it, in one day?
It certainly is. And in terms of this Christmas, certainly post-COVID, are things actually picking up again now? Are we pretty much back to where we were before COVID?
Do you know, we're not far off, actually. And I've been incredibly cheered up by that, but both by the pace of recovery and, I suppose, the confidence returning. I think we've seen shifts and changes in the regional theatre model around the types of things that people want to see. If you're trying to sell a comedy show or a musical, you know, or something that is a known quantity, you're probably having a better time of it than somebody who's trying to produce a you know, brand new drama, you know, straight off the bat for an older audience, I guess. I think Panto recovered incredibly strongly last year, and all the signs, and I'm touching wood now, but all the signs are that recovery will continue, you know, through this year, and it will be back to what it was. And listen, long may that continue.
Absolutely. We've talked an awful lot before about the importance of Panto for theatre itself in terms of bringing children into live shows for the first time, but also getting people through the door who may then come back and see many other things during the year. It is really a shop window for the arts in many ways, isn't it? That's why it's vitally important that it does well.
100%, yeah. It's also why things like the Pantomime Awards are important. You know, that's a bit of a shop window for Panto as a sector. It was enormously encouraging to see the way in which that's been embraced by the Panto community, but also by, you know, the media and the press and by, you know, individuals. And actually the ticket sales for that, which, as you quite rightly say, took place at the Trafalgar Theatre this year, they went out the door so quickly. There were enough individual ticket buyers there who wanted to purchase them. And I think that's enormously positive because, you know, not only is it a celebration of Panto, but it legitimizes Panto. And I think that's very, very important, that we nurture and treasure something that is incredibly important to individuals and to audiences, but incredibly important to sustaining theatre and live entertainment, you know, in this country.
Well, let's hope we all have a fabulous Christmas. I'd like to be the first to wish you a Merry Christmas. It's maybe a little bit early for that, Chris, but I hope you have
It's never too early.
I hope you have a very, very successful pantomime season. And indeed, with everything you do 12 months of the year at all of the 15 venues and everything else that Trafalgar Theatre Group are involved with. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for talking to us.
No, my pleasure. Really good to talk to you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. And I'm afraid that's it for now. We really do appreciate your support for this podcast series. So go to where you normally get your podcasts from and check out the 50 plus previous episodes, and make sure you subscribe so that you don't miss out in the future. If you want to find out more about Imagine Theatre, go to the website at imaginetheatre.co.uk. And next time, the tables will be well and truly turned, because Steve Bowden is going to be talking to me about my love of Panto and my 32 seasons in a frock. That's coming up next time, so I'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to the latest edition of Just Imagine, the podcast series from Imagine Theatre. And you can find out more by going to www.imaginetheatre.co.uk.